Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and good afternoon from Chicago. In today's podcast, I'd like to welcome Mr. Rick Getcho. He is the Chief Technology Officer of a cyber company called Hivewatch. Rick, thanks for your time, and thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Now, let's get started. You seem to have a very rich and deep background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us some of the milestones in your career or some of the major highlights, please? Hello?
Hey, Robbie, I'm here. I'm going to see what happened to Rick.
Okay, here we go. So, Rick, tell us, welcome to our show, Rick. Tell us how you got started in cybersecurity and some of the highlights of your career, please.
Sure. So I got started in cybersecurity a while back, before it was actually kind of really thought of as cybersecurity. I worked for an internet service provider, and we did dial-up. And we were kind of one of the larger dial-up companies in the Midwest. And so while we didn't really think of it as cybersecurity, we still had to keep, you know, all of our users, usernames, passwords, any data that they were sharing with us secure. And so, you know, one of the things that we had developed was we were actually encrypting user passwords so that they weren't clear text and all of that. So while it wasn't actually what you would call cybersecurity, we were starting to use some of those practices in our ISP so that we could keep, you know, people's information secure. And so that is what got me interested in that. And then when I moved to the West Coast out here, when I was at MySpace, we started, you know, looking at how to make things more secure and how we can keep information while what people wanted to share public was public. You know, the rest that they wanted to keep private, we worked around keeping that secure. And then, you know, moving through other stages of my career, it's always been about keeping information safe and keeping users, keeping their expectations high for security within platforms. And my last position was with a healthcare risk management company. And so patient security was very, very high. We were, you know, bound by HIPAA, and we were also HITRUST certified. So there was a very large and very rigorous security component with that.
Okay, excellent. Now, how did you launch Hivewatch, or did you have a lending hand in creating that company?
So I actually came in after they had been around for a few years. I came into Hivewatch through a friend that's working here, Jason, the COO. He and I worked together at a previous position, and he was a project manager, and I was running web operations and security and infrastructure. And he and I got along really well, and it was one of those things where, you know, hey, if you're ever looking for something, you know, look me up and that sort of thing. And so when I was leaving my last position, I reached out to Jason, and he put me in touch with Ryan, and Ryan and I spoke and shared a very similar vision and thought it made sense for me to move over here.
Excellent. Now, how did you get the name, or how did the name Hivewatch originate? How did they get that name?
So it's my understanding, you know, that when you look at, say, a beehive or something like that, how everything is constantly moving within it. And, you know, it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen inside. And so when you look at that and you watch that, you start to learn how things work. And so for security, it just kind of made sense to pivot to that.
Okay, excellent. Now, were you in the entertainment industry first and then moved to doing physical security?
Yeah. So, you know, like I said, when I was at MySpace, we, of course, were entertainment. And then I was at Fandango for a little bit also. And that, you know, movie ticket sales, movies, they had gone through a few acquisitions to get some more content providers and that sort of thing. So definitely was on the entertainment side. I'm also a musician by trade. I've been playing music for a long, long time. And so making the move to physical security was interesting. It's not something I had done before, and it really kind of intrigued me. You know, with the media space, you're protecting rights, you know, and that sort of thing. When you move into physical security, you're actually protecting life. And so while the two, you know, may be different in certain ways, you still apply the same rigor.
Okay. How do you see technology being used in both areas that you've evolved in your career?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, you know, one of the things about using technology on the physical security side is there's a lot of room for technology to be introduced. But on the other side, there's also some, you know, kind of you look at technology a little bit speculatively because, you know, are you using technology to replace people or are you using technology to actually make better decisions? And I think it comes down more to using technology for decision making. If you can give as much cogent info as possible to operators, it makes their job easier and it helps them to make those life or death decisions much quicker. And by giving all of that, you're providing everything that someone might need to take guesswork out of it. On the entertainment side, you know, when you're looking at protecting media and rights and that sort of thing, technology still needs to be there. You know, looking back at some of the big events, the Sony event and that sort of thing, information is power. And the more information you have, the better your decision-making is and not necessarily the easier it is, but you have more tools at your disposal to take on those threat actors.
Okay. Now, back to Hivewatch. Tell us a little bit more about what you guys do, and if you can you do a deeper dive into your product?
So, yeah, we are a security fusion platform, and really what we do is we can bring together the physical security portion, being cameras, being readers, and that sort of thing, and consolidate those into a platform that allows those operators to have all that data in one location. You know, our platform allows them to kind of coalesce all this information so that they can, you know, view everything that's going on and make decisions and dispatch and do that sort of thing within the platform.
Okay, excellent. Now, what are some of the challenges that you're trying to solve in today's physical security world?
A lot of the challenges are around different manufacturers do things different ways. You know, in camera manufacturers, there's a number of them out there. Their APIs may all be different. They speak differently. A lot of the equipment that's out there is older legacy equipment. And, you know, when you have companies that go through acquisitions, a lot of times they don't change that physical security equipment there. They kind of make do with what's there, and they try and incorporate it into their platform. And so that makes it a little bit more difficult because operators are looking at, you know, multiple screens because they have multiple different systems that, you know, work in different ways. And so one of the challenges we try and solve is by bringing all of that into a single platform for operators to use so that we're not having them click through different things. They're not having to, you know, flip between different applications, have a bunch of different applications open and that sort of thing. So that's one of the challenges. And then, you know, some of the other challenges are just the sprawl of physical security. You know, you're having organizations that have multi-campuses or have multinational operations. They have buildings all around the world. And so bringing all of that into a security operations center to allow that better decision-making and give them all that information at their fingertips are some of the things that we're trying to help them solve.
Okay, excellent. Now, tell us some of your responsibilities as a CTO. How is that different from a CISO, and how does your experience fit within the ecosystem at Hivewatch?
So as a CTO, here I'm running a technology team, which encompasses a product team as well as an engineering team. So what we're doing is we're looking to future state, and we're looking at what technologies we need to develop to help build the platform and also to help inform operators. So we have the product side that's really looking at strategy, looking at the market, and finding those openings where we can fill those needs for customers. And then we have the engineering team that's building it. And so prior, you know, as a CISO, it was much more around keeping what we have secure and making sure that all of our data is secure and that all of our systems are talking to each other, we're monitoring everything, and we're holistically looking at the security of the organization. On the CTO side, it's a little bit more around having that technology vision for the organization and building towards those future states.
Okay. Now, it sounds like you have multiple teams. So how do you manage them? I mean, what's your approach to that?
I have taken on kind of a little bit, I don't know that it's a different management style, but it's worked for me a little bit. And I really feel that my management philosophy is I kind of have two real jobs, one of which is making sure that the teams and team members and that sort of thing have everything they need to do their job. And what I mean by that is it could be training, it could be more people, it could be support, it could be communication, anything that helps them be successful in their role. And then the second part of it is a kind of two-part. And one is I'm there to say no when they feel they can't, you know, and a lot of times in organizations, you know, people want to say no, or they want to present different ways or that sort of thing, and they maybe don't feel like they can. So as a leader, I try and be that voice. And then the second side of it is inspiring them to grow and, you know, recognizing that talent and helping people grow to their potential so that, you know, they can be assets to either our organization, another organization when they move on. But it's absolutely helping lead those people into their highest potential.
Okay. Now, what kind of leaders, now, you know, obviously being CTO or CISO, you know, it's a huge, huge responsibility. What are some of the leadership qualities that you believe you possess, and what do you look for in other people in your company?
One thing is ownership. You know, being in a startup, a lot of times, you know, you have equity, you have that sort of thing. But it's more around owning what you do, having that the responsibility, but also, you know, having that integrity to make sure that, you know, my word is my bond, meaning what I say, and also, you know, realizing that I can't do everything and that I need people to help me. And so asking those questions that allow people to help and getting people involved in the process, and then also holding them accountable for the things that they own.
Okay, excellent. Now, how do you handle the prioritization of cybersecurity? You're SOC 2 compliant, I believe, right?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Tell us about that process and what it was like to get through that and how it's helped Hivewatch today, like improve the believability of your customers, you know, and other prospects that you may come across.
So SOC 2 is one of those things that, you know, it shows to everyone else that you take security seriously, that it's part of your process. You have gone the extra mile to make sure that you're upholding those values and that your customers can rely on you and believe that you hold their data as valuable as they do. And the process for us, you know, I wasn't here for the first time. I was here for the second recertification. And, you know, one of the biggest things is kind of like I said with leadership, it's about the integrity. You know, do what you say you're doing. And that's one thing that SOC 2 kind of reiterates and reinforces is that, you know, yes, you can say that you're doing these things to keep data safe, but you have to actually also show it. And so that's been one of the things with SOC 2 that I think has really helped Hivewatch kind of step up and go that extra mile is that, hey, we're walking the walk as well.
Okay, excellent. Now to get us some other issues of cybersecurity, physical security, the Internet of Things is a huge thing right now. I have my views on that, but anyway, what are some of the ways that companies can make use of the IoT to protect, you know, whatever they do in their network and IT infrastructures? And what are your thoughts on the IoT? I mean, it's all this interconnectivity. I mean, do you have like a smart home or a smart car?
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it at some point. But yeah, IoT, we're not going to get away from it. It is the thing. It's just going to continue on. Most of, you know, the newer security cameras that are going out are direct internet connection, and you can manage them through the internet. And so what it's done is it's created, you know, another one of those threat vectors that companies need to pay attention to. And, you know, in my studies when I was doing my master's degree, one of the things that we talked about was, you know, Internet of Things and how companies need to secure them and actually what you need to look at going forward with all of these things. And is it worth it to interconnect all these things? And, you know, I don't know the right answer to that, but I do think that, you know, the responsibility does lie with companies and users to educate themselves about IoT and to make sure that they understand the implications of putting IoT into their network. But also, I think as cybersecurity professionals, you have a responsibility to help walk people through those threats and kind of talk to them about the vulnerabilities of doing this and help to educate them on those. And, you know, I do have a number of devices in my house. I have, you know, internet in my car and that sort of thing. And I'm cognizant and I try and, you know, do best practices where I possibly can. But also I do know it makes my life a whole lot easier in a number of ways having those devices. But I do understand the risk also.
Okay, excellent. Now, my view on the IoT is that I think I'm an old-fashioned guy, and to be honest, as much as I've been in cybersecurity, I really do hate technology in the end. I only have two mobile apps. Like, for example, I only have two mobile apps on my iPhone to check my email and for Google Maps, and that's all I have. I drive an old-fashioned 2003 Honda Civic, and I just kind of believe in having control over that. I don't have, like, a smart car or smart home, but I realize, you know, this is the way of the future. So I try to live my, you know, the way I look at it, I try to live as simply as possible so you don't expand that attack surface for the cyber attack. Because I think the more interconnected you are, the more threat surface actually expands. And plus, the vendors who make IoT products, they're not cognizant enough to actually, you know, layer in security into their products. And if they do, they never tell people to actually, like a customer, to, you know, set them to their own security requirements. Instead, they just kind of leave it to the default settings, which is, you know, very unsafe. And I think California came out with an IoT legislation or something, or best practices, but I don't think anything's really ever come to fruition on that. But, yeah. I'm kind of leery about it, to be honest. I mean, it's a great thing. You know, it's exciting in some ways, but, you know, I'm kind of an old-fashioned guy that way.
Yeah, but anyway, I hear you. I completely understand, you know, reducing the, you know, the threat landscape and that sort of thing. And my wife at times has told me, geez, you're connected to everything. Everything in the house is connected, which is awesome until the power goes out, you know, and then it's like we have to manually open the garage door. We have to do all these other things. And so, yeah, technology is there to solve problems and to make life easier. But then again, when it goes away, what are you left with?
Right. Well, that brings you to my next question I want to ask you. And I probably told you about this before, but what do you think about artificial intelligence? I mean, ChatGPT is all the craze right now, and I think there have been some studies which have shown it's actually dying down now in terms of popularity. Does Hivewatch make use of AI? Like, what are your general thoughts on that? Is that going to be the whole job replacement tool?
So I would have to say I don't view it as something that should replace jobs. I view it as something that should help make better decisions. And I think that AI can help drive decision making, but I don't think it should be there to replace people. In the physical security space, I don't know that yet, we're certainly not there yet, but I don't want AI making decisions on life or death. There still needs to be a human to make some of those decisions, but I do think AI can help make better decisions.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, as I said, I've written a whole book on AI, and I've just submitted a manuscript on AI and Azure and ChatGPT, but I think AI, I think the whole thing right now is a big craze, kind of like the dot-com thing, back in the late 90s, with a Java, what was it, Sun Microsystems, they had their commercial where the dot and dot-com. I think the AI craze is going to die down, but what it has done, it's left its mark. And I think we're going to see it evolve over time, where it's really going to be used as an automation. For example, my dad was the professor of neurobiology at Purdue. He was in spinal cord regeneration research, and he said, we will never understand the human brain. At best, we'll only understand like 0.5% of it. And I think where society is kind of getting off that, it's going to mimic the whole human brain. That will never, never, ever happen, in my opinion. So, but anyway, those are just my 2 cents worth.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I would agree. And I think, we're scratching the surface, and any kind of really new thing, we figure out, what it can do, and then we decide, what it should do. And
right,
we're moving towards that, I think, with AI. And I think it's incredibly powerful for some things, not for everything, though.
Right. In fact, in my book, I did talk about the social impacts of that. Apparently, the Biden administration, they're taking this stuff pretty seriously. They've actually even come out with an AI Bill of Rights for consumers like you and me and Jenna, and we can protect ourselves. In fact, even when I'm sending out resumes for job searching, a new question has popped up. Do you want your resume to be scanned by an AI system or by a human being? Yeah, and I've never even seen that before until this week, to be honest. So that was something that I totally never even thought of before. So, but anyway.
Yeah, so it definitely is, and it filters. I mean, that's the other thing is, I've talked to some people that have been, looking for jobs, and because they haven't matched exactly what those filters are looking for, AI has dumped their resume, even though they probably would have been really, really great people for that position.
Right. Yeah. Well, anyway, now talking about the physical security aspect, I have a couple of other questions, if you don't mind my asking. For physical
sure.
security, do you make use of biometric technology for, like, physical access entry, like using hand geometry scanners, fingerprint scanners, or iris recognition devices?
Yeah, so currently we're not doing a whole lot with that. It's definitely something, that we look at, and there are companies, like pharmaceutical biometric is very large. And, while we look to move into those markets, it's something that we need to be aware of and we need to learn how to work with and how to help companies make decisions using those types of devices.
Okay, excellent. Now, another question that I have on the side here is COVID-19. Now, unfortunately, that changed the world upside down probably 50 times over, but there have been some good things that have come out of it. How did COVID-19 impact you, your employees, and Hivewatch? Do you guys all work remotely, and how do you foresee the future landscape of this thing? We're going to have all the workforce.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. So I came to Hivewatch post-COVID. Coming in here, I also noticed that, there was still distancing going on. We have a back to office policy, and people are coming into the office. I like the office work. It's much more collaborative in my mind. But I also, at my previous position, was remote for the better part of 2 years. And so I did see the effects of that on companies and engineering teams and that sort of thing. Going forward, you know, I think industries have changed. I think the value of remote workers has been realized in a number of industries have kind of found out that, hey, we don't need huge office buildings to support all of these people. However, from the physical security side, I don't know that it impacts it a huge amount because those buildings still need people watching them. They still need to, you know, protect all of those assets. And so while there was an impact, I do think that, you know, the physical security side kind of soldiered through COVID quite a bit.
Sure. Okay. Finally, Rick, as we wrap up our show, just two questions here. What do you recommend for companies or clients, friends, family, like what to do to mitigate the risk of being a victim of a cyber attack? We all can be a victim. In fact, I was almost one this morning myself, actually. But do you have like a laundry list? And secondly, like what are some of the big threats you see coming down on the cyber threat landscape coming in, going into the second half of the year?
So the first one, for me, it's always been around, you know, education and awareness. You know, as you know, most of the cybersecurity incidents within organizations happen from either insiders or through, you know, phishing and that sort of thing, from people clicking on links or you know, responding to things they probably shouldn't. And so that really comes down to training and awareness. The more aware you are of things and questioning, you know, is this email really from somebody I know? Do I trust this? And on the other side of it, you know, for personal stuff, you know, at your home, again, you know, be careful with the information that's important to you. Don't share things that you wouldn't want people to know. Understand who you're talking to. Understand what you're saying and think twice about, you know, what you're sharing. So for me, that's the big thing with cybersecurity is, you know, be aware, educate yourself around what's coming down and that sort of thing. And then to go to your second question about, you know, things coming over the next 6 months or so, I think actually what we were talking about earlier with AI is going to start to be a little bit bigger threat landscape. I think people are going to leverage that a little bit more for, you know, persona attacks, that sort of thing, but also to get smarter. You know, one of the things that, you know, ChatGPT is, you know, is kind of good at is presenting some things, not really knowing context of it. And so those bad actors can figure out maybe a little bit more nuanced way of doing things that they didn't know before. And so I think as we move into the, you know, the next phase of this, again, it's going to be educating and being aware of how these things are going to be used and protecting yourself against them.
Now, as you wrap up our show, Rick, what is the best way for someone to get a hold of you in case they're interested in your services, your products, or they just have general questions?
So, yeah, hivewatch.com. is the website. Anything can be handled through there. Our sales team will get back with anybody right away. They're pretty awesome about doing that. So yeah, if you were to go to hivewatch.com, that is the best way to get a hold of us.
Okay, excellent. Well, Rick, we thank you for having on our show. It's been a great pleasure, and we hope to have you get on future podcasts.
Awesome. I would love to. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. Goodbye.